Revy, I was wondering on the mission of Aindarshan. So I have several questions. Does that Isser only apply to the, because there used to be a Masura of actual like Torah knowledge, whether it's on metaphysics or physics. So does that Isser also extend now to just general ventures in metaphysics, just anyone's personal study? Is there still an Isser of like engaging in metaphysics even today outside of the context of
hold the question. I just want to say one thing from Perm.
Okay.
That everybody sings Shoshana Siakov Sahala Vasmecha, right? Berosum Yachat Chelas Mordechai. So, what exactly does that mean? Does it mean? Anybody have any idea?
What's the translation?
Shoshana Siakov Sahala Vasmecha. Berosum Yachad Tchelas Mordechai.
Yeah, what's the Tchelas Mordechai?
That's what I wanted to explain.
Question.
Okay, because it's a funny thing. Everybody sings that song. I never saw any interpretation of it. So I was thinking of it myself this year. So I just wanted to say that, to say the chat. What is the Tchelas Mordechai? So I think the pshat is very simple. That the pasuk says that Mordechai yatzo milifnei hamelech b'tchelas v'chur v'aterazov. I think the Sachrich Butzi Agama. The Yair Shushan Tzohalova Somecha. So when we say Shoshanas Yaakov, so the Gemara says that the Jews are Nimshel to a Shoshana. So that means that's the Yair Shushan Tzohalova Somecha. But what is Berosum Yachad Tchelas Mordechai? So what it means to say is like this, that really, when he went on the horse of the king, so he was wearing very beautiful garments. Tchelas Vachur Vaterezov Gedola. So why does it just mention the Tchelas? So the answer is that's what the Piyut is trying to tell you, that the Jews were happy when they saw the Tchelas. Why? Because it was the Tchelas Mordechai, the fact that he wears tzitzis. And the Tchelas makes a person think of God. So they knew that the Yeshua came from his keeping the Torah. And that's why God saved him. So that's why it says Tchelas Mordechai. In other words, it omits all the other things. Because the other things are just grandeur. But the victory came because of Mordechai's keeping the halacha. And the halacha is that tzitzis reminds you of God. Because the tchelas reminds you of the ocean, you know, the chazal, the ocean reminds you of the sky, and the sky reminds you of God. So the meeting Yeshua came because of only one reason, that Mordechai thought in the way that the Torah teaches a person to think with Chachma. Okay, I just wanted to put that one down because I know everybody sings that song and I don't think too many people know what it means.
It's true.
So, okay. So the Tchelis was for the people to recognize this, that Mordechai acted in such a way?
In other words, the people recognized the Tchelis. It means the Tchelis that he wore reminded them of the real Tchelis, of the Tzitzis. Because in Mitzvah Tzitzis, there's a Mitzvah Tchelis. Mm-hmm. Because the Tchelis reminds a person of God. So that was really what caused the Yeshua, was because he thought in the way the Torah taught. For instance, I'll give you an example, that it says that Mordechai, when he heard the decree, so he went out, before the Shara Melech, and he was wearing torn garments and ash. Now, why wasn't anybody else there? Why was he the only person that was that was protesting?
Right.
What's the answer? The answer is because the other people, the other Jews, they heard the decree, and they heard that the decree is not going to take place for another 11 months. So they were baffled by it. And they thought we have time to discuss it. But Mordechai didn't think that way. He knew he has to act immediately. And that's why it says that Yavar Mordechai, that year they didn't keep Pesach. Because they fasted. So that was the derech of the Chochmah of the Torah, taught him that if you want to protest, you've got to do it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because you have more time to let events play out if you start pushing it?
Because he realized that every moment you wait, is a concession. In other words, if the outcry is not immediate...
It's like you're contemplating it.
Yeah, so...
Or you're delaying the inevitable, you're...
Like, that's right, so the Melech sees that, hey, these guys can exist with this idea. So he knew, his Chachma taught him that you've got to protest immediately. And that was the Chochmah Satorah. So that's why he was successful. Now, where did he get the Chochmah Satorah from? From the Mitzvah Satorah. And the recognition of God. So that's why it says, that's why it mentions the Tchelis. The Tchelis was a reference to the Tchelis of the Tzitzis, which is a reference to the recognition of God. And the Chochmas HaTorah that we have as a nation from the Torah.
Is that what Mordechai tries to convey to Esther when Mordechai says that if you don't go speak to the king, the Yeshua will come from some other source, from God? like God will find another source for the Yeshua?
Yeah, that happens to be a good question. How did he know that?
Right, it seems like Amuna Pshuta over there, like, all right, if you don't do it, something will happen and we'll be saved.
That's right. All we know is that the Jews will never be destroyed. But we don't know how many Jews are going to remain in a given tragedy.
Right.
So I think that what he really was saying was that he wasn't saying that it's definitely going to be a Reva Chatzila, but he was telling her that in other words, he was telling her that she shouldn't think that she can escape because she's the Malka. Because the nature of anti-Semitism is that they'll root you out no matter how you hide, like the Nazis. Even one-eighth of a Jew was killed. So that's why he says, the Atu Vesavir Tavedu. Alpha Dami Venashech, we Moet Besamelch Mikola Yudim. Don't think that if something bad happens to the Jews, that you are going to escape. Because they'll find you out. If they're successful, they'll find you out. If the anti-Semitism is acted out, you're going to be found out and destroyed. That was one part of the message. That was Alter Dami V'Nashech V'Yimolei Beis HaMelech Mikol HaYehudim. But still, it doesn't answer the question of the Reva Chatzila. Was he saying that like the Torah's tefillah, or I don't know.
It doesn't sound like a tefillah, because he's directing it toward this conversation towards Esther.
That's correct. But the question is, if you have Reuach Ratzala, so why would they kill her? And what does it mean, Al-Tadami V'Nashich, L'Yimolei Beis HaMelech Mikol HaYehudim? That's only if you don't have Reuach Ratzala. So that's a problem.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is weird, because even before that, Mordechai says, who knows, maybe you were put here for this particular reason, which seems like he's touching on some idea of Hashgachas Hashem.
That's right, but he's not sure.
Yeah, like he's confused by the whole thing.
He's not sure. Sounds like two different messages. That if Hashgacha is Reva Chatzila, so then just missed your opportunity to be part, to be the cause of it. And if there's no Rebel Heart Fellow, then you're going to be destroyed.
Right.
But I agree, it's difficult. It's a difficult person. And how could he, and how could he know that, that there's going to be real hot soul?
Right,
well,
he wasn't a nun, was he?
Why will she be destroyed?
I mean, there's no guarantee that the there's no guarantee that the salvation would come through in a way that everyone would be saved. I mean, it could just be that only a part of Yisrael would make it through. There's no guarantee that everyone would live. So you could just be saying, listen, we don't know what happened, so, you know, you're in a high position, so, you know, more likely than not, you're going to get hit first before anyone else.
You mean even if there is Reach HaSoah?
Right. I mean, what's the guarantee that the whole Am is gonna be okay?
That's true. You mean there could be a period where they're gonna be attacked and destroyed to a certain degree.
Right.
Didn't she hide that she was Judah? Where'd she go first?
But it still doesn't explain the Reach HaSoah. Unless he meant that Reach HaSoah means that ultimately Klal Yisrael is going to be saved.
Right, but how can he say that? Is Klal Yisrael as a whole, or just the people in Shushan and the surrounding cities?
Klal Yisrael as a whole.
But what shaychus does the Klal Yisrael in, you know, 20,000 miles away have to do with Klal Yisrael here?
Well, the edict wasn't everyone.
Only the people in those lands.
Well, it was basically everywhere.
It's like the whole world.
That's true, yeah. Hey, give me a minute. Didn't we have this worked out? On Purim?
Everything sounds like it worked out on Purim.
Yeah. But you see, by Emilio Dea, he wasn't sure. He was saying it could be that the Ashkacha placed you here for this.
Right.
Which is very much in line with rational thinking.
Right, that's the proper approach to Hashkacha. Like, you don't know. It could be or it can't be. You can't definitively say what is, what isn't.
That's correct. That idea, you see, is supported here. But the Reach HaSoah still poses a problem. Unless he means that in the future, that even if the decree over here, there will ultimately be a river chasura.
But on what basis is he saying that?
Because Klal Yisrael can't be destroyed. So maybe he was just saying that even if we're not successful here, but Reruch HaTzoa will take place in Makom Acher, ultimately. And if that's the case, and it doesn't take place over here, then you will be destroyed. In other words, ultimately there will be a Reruch HaTzoa. That we know. And if this decree goes through, so then you're going to be destroyed. And it might even be that the Hashgacha is that you should be appointed for this Yeshua. In other words, he wasn't saying that the Reruch HaTzoa will take place here, Mimakom Acher. He means ultimately for the Jew there will be a Reruch HaTzoa.
Meaning to say the Emos HaMashiach or a separate event?
Well, it means that they can't destroy the Jew. There's always a Reruch HaTzoa. Shebechol Dovah Goram Demolein Olachal Senu. I mean, sometimes they're successful to a high degree. Look at the Churban HaBayis and look at Beitar. They were successful, but still there was a Reruch HaTzoa because we're still here. So there is a guarantee for the existence of the Jew.
Where's the Torah source for that?
It's all through the Nevi'im. As a matter of fact, the pasuk says that there's a pasuk that says, just give me a second. That says that only a tenth will be saved. That the ultimate goal is there's only going to be a few, not that many people. The Rambam mentions it. I'm trying to think of the pasuk. Anybody know?
Yeah,
I got the pasuk. V'od bo Assyria. V'od bo Assyria. And there still is left a tenth.
It's not that much.
Not that much. And the Rambam says that at the ultimate Geula, there's only going to be a few.
I mean, but that seems very difficult, because in the ultimate Yeshua, we're, isn't the entire world going to have Yedias Hashem?
You mean after that?
Yeah, so who... We're going to have, what, 1,000 people spread these ideas? It seems pretty difficult.
I guess that from the Yeshua, the Yedias Hashem will be...
Parent.
Will be expressed.
Isn't it also part of Tchias HaMesim that they're going to come back and teach also the ideas?
Before Tchias HaMesim. The Geula itself. The Olam HaRishiyim Bahar Tzion. So maybe that's what he was saying. That ultimately we're going to have a Reuach HaTzol anyways. And if you think you're going to save yourself, if there's a tragedy here, that is not true. Because the anti-Semites will root you out and your family and kill you soon. And then he said, and maybe the hashgacha is that we're going to have a Yeshua here. And you're the one that the hashgacha put in position to bring it about.
Right.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because how could he know Reuach HaTzol? You see, many times we didn't have a Reuach HaTzol. The only thing we have is that we were never destroyed. In spite of the crazy anti-Semitism, which you see, which is rising today, at an unbelievable rate. Which is completely unintelligible. Nobody can explain it.
Is this as bad as it was like in the 20s and 30s in Europe?
It's starting to approach those proportions because you see it happening in all the countries. I mean, it's scary. I mean, all over the world, even in America.
Right, you have bomb threats every single day at a different JCC.
That's right. And on the college campuses, the anti-Semitism is unbelievable. It's so unbelievable. Well, did you see when Friedman was questioned, the protesters were unbelievable.
Yeah, they've never done that to anybody else.
That's right. That's correct. I mean, there were so many. And what did he do to deserve that? He's just an Orthodox Jew. But the hatred is there.
Is there anything as like an Am that we're supposed to do in response to that? Like, it seems like it's a like a supernatural phenomenon. There isn't really anything practically that can be done about it.
That's a good point.
realize that there is nothing to be done about.
There's one thing I was thinking of, and that is that the Chazal say that why were the Jews punished in the time of Esther? Why did that decree come out? So they say because they were nene from the Suda of Achashverosh. So the question is, what choice did they have? They shouldn't go to the Suda. They would definitely be killed.
Right.
So they did the logical thing. But the only thing is, what Chazal is saying is that they were nene. They enjoyed it and they participated in it as if it was their own simcha. And that, I believe, is something that irritates the guy. That the Jew doesn't just go to the parties. He goes as a participant and he shows himself off. If he would go in a lower manner, he would remove a lot of anti-Semitism.
Meaning because he acts in like an ostentatious way when he's here?
One of the Mepharshim on the Chumash, I'm trying to think of his name. He's in the Necros Kedolos. One of the later ones. Do you know the name?
Like the Radak?
Kliyakar.
Yeah, Kliyakar. The Kliyakar says in Dvarim that the Jews, when they go into a country, so they buy beautiful homes and they live ostentatiously, and that's what causes the Goyim to hate them.
And they move into the White House?
That's correct.
Definitely doesn't help the cause.
It didn't help us. So the thing is that the Jew has a tendency to be arrogant and act as if he has the control and ownership, and he lives ostentatiously, and that's why the guy has a tremendous sinner. The one thing that would reduce it would be if the Jew would reduce himself. But you see, for instance, that the guy never wanted the Jews to be part in America, to be part of their clubs. They kept them out of the golf clubs originally, and they kept them out of the hotels, the fancy hotels, but the Jew kept running after that to try to undo it. He couldn't accept a second place. And eventually he succeeded. But you see the tremendous backlash of anti-Semitism. And that's what the Kliyakar says. That's one of the big causes. I don't believe you'll do away with it completely anyways, but that's a big factor.
But that's only what manifests it. That's not what causes the hatred.
No. No, it's not. That kind of is fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing thing that it's a phenomenon that nobody has ever been able to explain.
Yeah.
Right, you don't see that type of hatred towards any other religion. I mean, nowadays there is the extreme right that seems to hate every religion equally. Like, if you're a Muslim, Jewish, they hate you all.
Right.
But, like, even over the course of thousands of years, like, we're always the... even though other people are being, you know, persecuted, we're always somehow in the mix. Like, we're always either tagged along or the focus.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, because take a look at the Muslims. They're the ones that should really have the greatest hatred. They have a barbaric religion. They believe in destroying the world. And the Jew has more hatred than they have.
Right.
And what does the Jew do? Nothing. What harm does he cause? In every country he went, he built up the country. So where does that hatred come from?
Yeah.
So they'll tell you about a Amalek in the Torah. Yeah, but that they don't believe in that anyways. And in terms of modern history, the Jew never harmed anybody.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays they view the state of Israel as harming the Palestinians. It's like we're oppressing them.
That's correct. And that's why many Gedolim were against establishing the state. Rav Henkin was against it.
Right.
But of course he said, once you have it, now we have to defend it. But there were many Gedolim that were against it. But the truth of the matter is that the anti-Semitism existed before the state. As a matter of fact, that was the case of the Dreyfus case. The tremendous anti-Semitism in France that caused Herzl to start Zionism.
Right.
What I don't understand, though, is the other, you know, the guy in that without with very little knowledge of the Jews and of what the Jewish beliefs are, this hatred could still exist. I just don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, and it's an amazing thing. I have my niece's husband works in
a hospital?
One of the islands. What's next to Haiti? Dominican Republic.
Right.
So he works in the Dominican Republic. And he speaks, he converses at length with the population there. And they know him. They know he's a Jew. They don't hate him. But he told me this week, he says, that they were sitting around and one of them said, don't you know there was the Jews that knocked down the Twin Towers? So he said to them, he says, you're making the most anti-Semitic statement possible. You don't even know the facts. And they're nice people. They're not going to bother them. But they really believe that. And that's why, and they believe that the Jews control the entire world. And that that's the famous elders of the elders of Zion.
Not on purpose,
right?
And they really believed it, and they do believe it now. I saw that interview with blacks in Brooklyn, and they all believe in the elders of Zion. In this.
It's like an animalistic instinct. It's like the same thing, like how like bugs are attracted to the sun. It's like something with they just know that it just like pervades all of society that the Jews are a problem, like subconsciously almost.
Yeah, like they have a hidden control of the whole world. So it's so paradoxical. It's just amazing. They don't do that with any other nation. Nobody else. Why the Jews? No, nobody can. A lot of people tried to answer it. I think he tried to answer it, or what's his name? Famous guy, famous writer from Yale. He used to have a television show. Very prolific writer.
Jewish guy, or?
Who?
Was he Jewish?
No, he wasn't Jewish. He wasn't Jewish, but he wrote a book in search of anti-Semitism.
Wow.
Is that Jews God in History? Is that that one?
No. It's, he's a famous guy. He was a religious Gentile. But he wasn't anti-Semitic, but he tried to discover what the source was. I read through his book.
William Buckley Jr.?
Yeah, well, that's it, William Buckley.
I looked it up, I didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Buckley. But I don't think he discovered it.
What was his conclusion?
I read through the book, and I guess I forgot the whole book after I read it because I didn't feel there was anything valuable to him. There was a lot of conjecture. Uh-huh. Crazy. It's amazing. Nobody has ever been able to explain it. And it doesn't necessarily hit only the religious Jew. It's the secular Jew who's caught in the same trap.
And sometimes they're the worst ones, the secular Jews.
That's right. Dreyfus was not religious. I mean, that's really the phenomenon of the Megillah. The Megillah captures all the ideas of anti-Semitism.
And also, Zeresh's response to Haman sort of reflects this idea, because that's what she says to him, how you're not going to succeed because there's something unique about the Jew that you're just not able to surmount.
That once they, she said that if he's, once they start winning, then you can't stop them. You know who said the same exact thing word for word? Nixon. Nixon, in his tapes, he recognized the Jew. He hired Secretary of State.
Kissinger?
The Jewish guy.
Kissinger?
Excuse me?
Kissinger.
Right. But at the same time, he had the exact, he says it almost word for word, what Zeresh says. That once they start gaining on you, he says they'll destroy you.
Wow.
I couldn't believe that somebody read it to me. It was from the recordings. It's a crazy phenomenon. It's a completely paranoid view.
Yeah.
And there isn't an ounce of truth to all the accusations. The blood libels. Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It's best for Jews to just lay low then.
Yeah, that is a good idea. It's funny, the Rav said that one of the reasons that the Stalians negated the Megillah was because they said it's impossible that one person like Haman should have such an effect. But after Hitler, they didn't say that anymore. Because they thought that's too astounding. But it is a characteristic of the whole anti-Semitism.
But also, why is that even comparable to begin with? Because Haman is just an advisor. So why is it so spectacular that you would have an advisor to a king convince the king to do something evil? Like, Hitler is different because he actually assumed power with this crazy agenda. Well, like, that's more ridiculous.
Right.
Like, I almost don't even hear the question to begin with.
So your question is?
My question is, in other words, their premise is how can one man make such a difference? But he was already a trusted advisor to the king.
Right.
So if the king just happened to go along with his strategy, that doesn't seem too ridiculous to me.
I mean, that sounds more ridiculous.
It sounds...
Hitler seems more
ridiculous. Yeah, Hitler seems more ridiculous, because that's one guy... I mean, what Hitler did was incredible from, like, a leadership standpoint, but,
yes,
like, the what Haman did doesn't seem so crazy out of the ordinary.
That's true. And the truth of the matter is he wasn't just a one-man show. Because Ahasuerus was very anti-Semitic too. Because when Haman said that I'm gonna supply the money for the work, so Ahasuerus said, HaKesef Nosun Loch. Don't give me any money. So you see that he was a serious anti-Semite.
Yeah.
But the only thing was that there are two types of anti-Semites. See, Mordechai aligned himself with Ahasuerus because he told on Big Son of Ahasuerus. They wanted to kill him. But he went and he ratted on them. So he aligned himself with Ahasuerus. So the question is, why should he align himself with Ahasuerus? If Ahasuerus was an anti-Semite, he brought in the Klei HaMikdash. And you see, he joined Haman in his plan. But the answer is he wasn't Amalek. There would be no reason to try to help Hitler. Mordechai felt that since he has Esther, and now if he aligns and he does a favor to the Melech may at some time recognize it, even though he was an anti-Semite. But he wasn't an intrinsic anti-Semite.
He was more just like for, like, almost pragmatically. Like, if a Jew was on my side, then I was going to like a Jew. Otherwise, I have no reason to like them.
That's right. So, Mordechai knew that he could be undone. It's possible for him to go the other way. But Haman is not possible. If you helped us, Stalin, I don't know enough about him, but it could be that he would recognize if a Jew did him a favor. I don't know. He was a crazy killer. But he wasn't Hitler. Hitler, that's Amalek. Amalek is not just an anti-Semite, but an intrinsic anti-Semite. That's the Zecher Amalek. It's a special mean of anti-Semite.
Does that sort of anti-Semitism exist so much nowadays, like the Amalek kind?
Palestinian?
That's a good question.
Like, let's say the Palestinians. Like, it doesn't seem. I mean, I don't know. I hear both ways. If that would be like more like Hitler or more just like a pragmatic anti-Semitism.
I mean, but the Muslim religion in general believes that we have to be eradicated.
Yeah, but they believe the whole world has to be eradicated. And they believe America has to be eradicated too.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I mean, what is your opinion?
They are on the line.
I don't know. I don't. Not. I mean, wait. Like, because Hitler also believed that, like, the Muslims also have their idea of an Aryan. It's essentially just, you know, a Sharia-abiding Muslim, and that everybody else should either be second class or totally eradicated. Hitler also had the same idea, but the difference is that Hitler really put the Jew at the total bottom rung of the totem pole.
Yeah, he was. That's true. You see, the Muslims did live at peace with the Jews during certain times.
Yeah.
The thing is that Muslims don't hate Jews for their philosophy. Like, they don't necessarily hate Jews because their philosophy is directly in conflict with ours.
Right.
It's that some of their ideas say that they should eradicate certain peoples and certain, but not like our essential idea of who we are and their essential idea of who they are in contrast to each other, which is what Amalek is.
That's true. I mean, it's not the crazed anti-Semitism of a Hitler or a Haman.
Right, whose philosophy of life is completely contrary to a Jew can't live while they're alive, so to speak. I mean, they can't live with themselves if they see the Jewish philosophy, you know, existing.
Yeah, that's. I think that's true. I don't think that they have the hatred of Amalek, but they're anti-Semites, but.
I mean, I kind of disagree with the fact that it's a hatred of the Jewish philosophy, because I think that there could still be hatred without any knowledge of the idea of the Jewish philosophy.
Yeah, they don't have any knowledge of the anti-Semites don't necessarily have a thorough knowledge of the Jewish philosophy. I mean, a lot of them try to dig it out of Chazal
just for argument's sake.
Yeah, to create more hatred. But most of them don't know.
That's true, but the true Amalek, I think, would understand the. Maybe I'm not. I think he understands the full.
It's where his ideology is to kill a Jew.
Of the Jewish philosophy.
The true Amalek?
Yeah, like the Haman or the. I mean, they
Because the hatred is so great that they dig into it. But I don't know, did Hitler ever manifest the knowledge of the Jewish philosophy?
I would think not.
Can it be that the Jewish philosophy is just an excuse to kill us? Like the Muslims, I don't know, but I think, don't they want to kill us just because we have Eretz Yisrael, and that's just an excuse, and maybe Amalek, I don't know the reason why they want to kill us, but because we have the Jewish philosophy, and I don't know, some
Muslims want to kill everybody.
Right, fine, but
even each other.
Amalek is when in the ideology of that nation they have an idea of killing Jews. Like that is their ideology. They don't necessarily have a reason or base off of anything, but the ideology of that nation is to kill Jews.
No, isn't their ideology to eradicate the idea of Yichud Hashem?
Yeah.
So, like, that's not necessarily the Muslims aren't trying to eradicate the idea of Yichud Hashem. Right, they have their own idea of Yichud Hashem, but, like, they just don't like anyone contrary to their ideas.
That's correct. It does seem that way. But I guess it should be mentioned that the anti-Semitism, which is completely unexplainable, is also, there's another unexplainable fact that you have different levels, like a level of Ahasuerus that could be changed, and a level of a Haman. That really is even more to the paradox, that you should have two distinct types. An intrinsic, irrevocable hatred, and a hatred that could somehow be worked out. You know, Truman was a big anti-Semite, personally. As a matter of fact, a Jewish interviewer wanted to go interview him in his house, and he wouldn't let him in his house. He said, "I have never allowed, and my wife would never allow a Jew in my house." Oh. On the other hand, when it came to Eretz Yisrael, he helped us. And he even had a partner that was Jewish. But the ambivalence is an amazing phenomenon also. Here he has a Jewish partner, and he won't let a Jew in his house. The whole thing is crazy.
It's one of the same emotion. Like they at the same time have like a certain awe and respect for the Jew, but because of that awe and respect, they as well kind of hate them for it.
That's true.
I mean, it sounds kind of like a jealousy thing. Like, whenever you're jealous of somebody who's so much superior than you, you're gonna, from a distance, you're going to say, oh, I don't like this guy, I don't want to associate myself with him. But when he's on your team, it's in your best interest to do well with the guy. So it sounds like the same thing as Truman.
It's like Nixon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable phenomenon.
Yeah. I feel like, is there a difference in a nation trying to kill everyone and the Jews aren't included in them and Amalek just trying to kill us? Either way, they're both trying to kill us, you know, shouldn't we just kill them also? I mean, it's the same, you know, the same, we're going to die either way. It shouldn't make a difference whether they specifically target us or they target everyone else. No?
You're making no sense at all right now.
I'm just asking a question.
And that quite is.
Yeah, what is your question?
My question is, since the Muslims, if they want to kill everyone, and the Jews are just happen to be included in that, you know, in the whole world, it shouldn't make a difference if Amalek specifically targets the Jews and no one else, or if the Muslims target everyone, it shouldn't make a difference. Either way, they're both trying to kill the Jews, whether it's by accident or, you know, intentionally.
That is true. we have to defend ourselves anyways.
Right.
But there is, but the Torah does zero in on a Amalek and sets it up as a separate mitzvah.
But I'm not saying there's a mitzvah to kill the Muslims, but...
Well, it's so far as you have to defend yourself.
Right.
He's not saying you
know. Okay, Rosa, we'll stop here. And the question that you wanted to raise today, we'll take care of bringing it out next week.
Okay,
all
right.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, sure.
I don't know how I'm going to go back.